Insert stereotypical Sparks intro now.
Well, soccer, you know, it was fun while it lasted. Catch in a couple of years. Welcome into the second episode of Shooting Bricks. I am your host, Pierce Bricks, along with me, Matt Olmstead, on the ones and the twos, splicing it up, chopping it up, mixing it down. We have a lot to get into today. Today is the National Soccer State of the Union, as Team USA has been eliminated from the World Cup. The funny thing about Team USA, and let me start by saying that I was totally in on Team USA. I watched the entire game. I was watching that game at work. I had it on my phone on the ESPN Go app, which really works surprisingly well, but that's neither here nor there. Had it on my television when I was at home. Had it on my radio. I either listened to or watched about 113 minutes of that 120-minute affair, and I missed all three goals.
Aww.
And the worst part about soccer, and you know, it's great that soccer is played for, you know, an entire 45-minute clip, and then 20 minutes for a break, and then another entire 45 minutes. It's very much like hockey in that regard. It's constant action. But at the same time, in America, we are used to the instant replay. You know, you throw a nice curveball in an A's-Mets game, you're going to see that curveball three times before the next pitch is thrown. If you make a great tackle or throw a touchdown pass, you can't miss that play. It's going to be on right after it happened, at halftime, in the middle of the third quarter. It's going to be on after the game. It's going to be on Monday, on Tuesday. When you're playing a soccer game, they score a goal. They run around because the most entertaining thing in soccer is watching these guys celebrate like idiots. That and watching these guys bite and headbutt each other. So you watch the celebration, and then the game starts again, and there's no time for them to show the instant replay. So not only did I miss the goal, I didn't get the, you know, the follow-up replays that I'm used to as an American sports fan. I was all in on Team USA. But what soccer fan needs to understand is everybody that was in on Team USA was not in on soccer. We have this conversation every 4 years. We had it 4 years ago. We had it 8 years ago. We had it 12 years ago. We will have it 4 years from now. Is soccer about to take off in this country? And the answer is no. The soccer fan likes to point out all the people in the bars going crazy, spilling beer on themselves every time, you know, Clint Dempsey touches the ball or Tim Howard made one of his 17 some odd saves in yesterday's contest against Belgium. But those are American fans. Those people are rooting for America. They're not rooting because they love soccer. The great novelty of Team USA is that they are out competing at the rest of the world's game and having a little bit of success. And by the way, it was only a little bit of success. America ended up 1-2-1 in this tournament, and we want to honor them. They're coming home to unbelievable fanfare. They went 1-2-1. I can't give that a winning percentage because there's a tie in there, but it's not very impressive. They won a game, a singular game. Tim Howard made the most saves in 50 years. You know why he made the most saves in 50 years? It's because Belgium was outplaying the United States like nobody's business. It's not that Tim Howard had a great game, which he did. But it's more so that the defense was so porous that Belgium got more shots at goal. In the middle of the second half, Belgium had 17 shots on goal. The United States had three. That's not a team that has quote-unquote arrived. And once we get a little bit further away from soccer, it is going to completely disappear from the national headlines. It's going to completely disappear from the national dialogue until it rolls back around in Russia 4 years from now. Why Russia keeps getting World Cups and Olympic Games, I have no idea. Last time I checked, Vladimir Putin was running that place into the ground, and we keep giving them medals of honor for it. The best way to tell that American soccer is not going to catch on is to look at the dialogue we're having today. We are having this post-World Cup conversation when the World Cup is still going on. the World Cup, for all intents and purposes, is just getting started. Like any tournament, like any championship match or any championship journey, the competition is going to get better and better and better the more teams that get knocked out. You're going to be left with Brazil and Germany and Belgium and Colombia and Argentina, and I think I guessed on about, you know, two or three of those. And the games are going to be much better. But the World Cup is already in the rear view for most American fans because America is no longer in it. And I wonder, because I don't really know this, I wonder if in places like Greece, in places like Italy, and in places like Portugal, if there is still great fanfare around these games. If everybody is, you know, grabbing their footballs and huddling in front of the television to watch two countries that they have no affinity towards or no relationship with kick a ball around a pitch. I don't know if that happens, but I think it's safe to say that it happens more in those countries than it does in ours. We are already past the World Cup and talking about next time around and talking about, will the MLS take off? The MLS is not going to take off. That is a fact. There is no fighting against that. I am a sports fan. I am a sports broadcaster. I can tell you two MLS teams. They've been around for over a decade. I can give you two. One is the New York Red Bull. And by the way, that totally illegitimizes your entire organization. If your biggest market has a team name sponsor like Red Bull, I mean, can you imagine the Minnesota Cialis's? Cialis? Man, will we go Cialis? I took multiple Cialis.
Yes.
The point is, the fact that your New York team is sponsored in name by Red Bull totally, totally crushes any legitimacy you were planning on having as an organization or an association. The other team I know is the LA Galaxy. If you want America to embrace soccer, there's only one way it can happen. America needs one or two teams in the Premier League. The Premier League, by all accounts, and again, I'm not an aficionado, is the best league in the world. You have Liverpool, you have Chelsea, you have Manchester, you have a whole bunch of other teams. We would need a U.S. East and a U.S. West. That would bring great soccer interest to the United States. You could latch on to something. I would have a reason to root for a team. I don't know where Chelsea is. I don't know if Chelsea is a city or a company sponsor. I really don't know that. You know, Liverpool, I have no vested interest in Liverpool or Manchester. I can't fake that. You know, I root for the New York Mets because my parents root for the Mets, my grandfather roots for the Mets, and I'm from New York. I can't just latch on to a team overseas. It's not going to be authentic. It's not going to be natural. If you made U.S. East, well, I'm from the U.S., I'm from the East Coast, I can get down with that. And then you will be watching the best players in the world. You will be competing with the best players in the world, and you will be seeing a great product. America is not going to ever settle. They will never, ever settle for the MLS. It didn't work in the XFL. We are used to having the best or nothing when it comes to our sports. We have the best hockey league in the world, and we, for the most part, don't care about hockey. Canada bums a couple teams in our league. The Russians send their best players over to us. The Czechoslovakians and all the other great European nations that have a passion for hockey, that walk around with three teeth and a goofy smile, concussed most of the time because they were playing street puck out in the pond, they all send their best product to us because we have the best league. Unfortunately, we are late to that party when it comes to soccer. The MLS is never going to take over some of the great South American leagues. It's never going to take over the Premier League. It will always be a second-class citizen, and as a second-class citizen, America will not jump on board. So the state of soccer in 2014, 15, 16, and beyond is the same as it was before Tim Howard, Clint Dempsey, and the rest of Team USA went on this brief run. Let's move on. Jason, wait. I got this into my screen. Matt, you have been to an MLS game?
I have. That was actually the first professional sports game that I've ever been to. I didn't go see baseball. I didn't see football or anything. I went to see a Major League Soccer game when I believe I was in eighth grade. Went with a friend.
So the MLS is brand spanking new when you're in eighth grade. I'm pretty sure it came out seventh or eighth grade, something along those lines
for people
of our age. So who'd you see?
I saw the Galaxy versus somebody. I mean, it was in Boston, I believe.
Wait, time out. You saw the Galaxy play a team in Boston. You can't even remember. You were at a game. You were at an MLS game, and you can't name the team?
No, I was there with my friend. He was, you know, it was a reason for me to get out of school, really. And the only thing I really remember from the game was on the trip there, I had to pee really bad, and they wouldn't let me out of the car to go pee on the side of the road. So I almost pissed my pants on the way there. But I do remember...
Good story.
An iconic player, Alexi Lalas, who was, I think, 6'6". He was like the carrot top of the soccer world.
Yeah, he was great. Back in the day, Alexi Lalas, Kobe Jones. You know, Lexi's actually anchoring ESPN's like pre- and post-game coverage of the World Cup. He's on all the time right now. He cut his hair. He doesn't have the long locks anymore. He doesn't look as much like Carrot Top. He actually does a phenomenal job. He's very articulate, explains the game quite well. Lexi's really doing it big. I don't know where Kobe Jones went.
Yeah, he was big too. He was playing.
Those are still my two soccer guys.
That's all I know when it comes to soccer.
And that's all you need to, you know, that goes back to the state of soccer. The two guys that I mention, the two guys that you know the names of are the same two guys you knew the names of in 1999. Moving on for real this time, let's talk about Jason Kidd, who just moved on from the Brooklyn Nets and went to the Milwaukee Bucks. This is one of the most bizarre stories from every single perspective possible, except from the perspective of the Brooklyn Nets. When you look at Jason Kidd, you scratch your head. When you think about what Jason was thinking, what was going through Jason Kidd's mind when he walked into Billy King's office and asked to be made president of basketball operations. Matt, Billy King is essentially the Nets' president of basketball operations. He went in and asked to be promoted by a guy to a position above that same guy. Do you know the cojones you have to have?
Huge nuts.
I mean, you're a teacher. That's walking into the principal's office and saying, hey, I was thinking about knocking you to vice principal, making myself principal. Can you okay that? Will you sign off on that decision? It's the fry guy going up to the manager at Mickey D's and saying, listen, I feel like I have really locked down the fry. There's no more growth for me in the deep fry department. I need to move up to upper management.
I need to be what you are right now.
He's been the coach of the Nets for one season. 2 years ago, he was backing up Raymond Felton for the New York Knicks. Now he thinks he's Phil Jackson. Now he thinks he's Doc Rivers. He didn't even have a very good season in Brooklyn. He had the infamous soda spilling incident. He underachieved for the first half of the season. The second half of the season, he got healthy. He got all of his veterans back, and he was able to make a run and kind of redeem himself. The team was able to bail Jason Kidd out. But I would not say that Jason Kidd is a great NBA coach. The jury's still out as to whether or not Jason Kidd is a good NBA coach. And he's trying to make a power move. And then you have the Milwaukee Bucks. And I understand that the new owner of the Milwaukee Bucks has a relationship with Jason Kidd. He used to be his financial advisor. But the Milwaukee Bucks were willing to give up 2 draft picks to bring in Jason Kidd. Unless Jason Kidd is going to be a player coach, unless Jason Kidd is going to run emergency point for the Milwaukee Bucks, that is a terrible decision. The Milwaukee Bucks are arguably the worst, most forgettable, pathetic organization in the NBA. No free agent stars go to Milwaukee. Carmelo Anthony met with Chicago yesterday. He met with Houston today. He's meeting with Dallas later. I don't think you're hearing anybody talk about Carmelo hopping on a train and making it up to Milwaukee. LeBron James is not considering, it's not shortlist. Lakers, Heat, Knicks, Milwaukee Bucks. It just doesn't happen. The best free agent signing that they have made in the last 20 years is Mike Dunleavy, a poor man's version of Christian Laettner. Christian Laettner reduced. That's the best that they've done. When the Milwaukee Bucks come into town to take on your team, it's a who's who of that guy still plays. If you're going to build a winner in Milwaukee, you need those second round picks. There are teams that can throw around second round draft picks, because we're going to be honest, second round picks oftentimes don't pan out in the National Basketball Association. This is not the NFL where there are 37 different rounds and guys picked in the sixth round like Tom Brady turn out to be megastars. You can count on one hand the amount of superstars that were picked in the second round within the last 10 to 12 years. Gilbert Arenas comes to mind. Manu Ginobili comes to mind. Not too many other guys. But if you're Milwaukee, you literally need to out-scout every team in the league. You need to out-grow. You need to have a farm system. You need to be the best, most efficient-run organization in the entire league to have a chance at being competitive. You need to be the San Antonio Spurs, who got the aforementioned Manu Ginobili in the second round, who got Tony Parker in the back third of the first round, Tiago Splitter in the back third of the first round, who got Danny Green to be a major contributor in the last two trips to the finals after he was a second round wash-up from the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's what you need to do. The New York Knicks, which is a borderline terrible example since they've been an absolutely abysmal franchise for the last 10 years. The New York Knicks can give up a second rounder here and a second rounder there because they have Broadway behind them. They have the history, the allure, the mecca of basketball, Madison Square Garden. They have New York City in their corner. All the Anheuser-Busch in the world is not going to bring a major, major basketball star to your city if your city is Milwaukee. And now you've traded away two second-round picks for Jason Kidd. And as we said, Jason Kidd's not proven. There are a small handful of coaches in the National Basketball Association that I would trade any picks for. Phil Jackson, if he was willing to coach my squad, come out of the front office. Greg Popovich. Maybe Tom Thibodeau. And that's about it. Gun to my head, I might be able to pick out another guy. I think Jeff Hornacek did a fantastic job in Phoenix. I think he's going to be a great head coach. But even so, even winning 45-plus games in the Western Conference, as rigorous as that was last season, I'm not giving up picks to get Jeff Hornacek. He's not proven, and he's far more proven than Jason Kidd. I understand that Jason Kidd brings a little bit of sex appeal to the Milwaukee Bucks. The guy's a Hall of Famer. The guy has name recognition. He is a name brand coach. There will be some buzz around Jason Kidd. There's going to be more buzz around Jason Kidd now because he left in such a ridiculous fashion. He ousted himself from Brooklyn. And I get that. You have new ownership. You want to make a bang. You want to get some headlines. You want people to talk about Jason Kidd in his first year coaching the Milwaukee Bucks. Jason Kidd, Hall of Famer, face of your franchise to go along with number two overall pick Jabari Parker. That makes some sense, but again, there are guys on the sideline right now that you could talk to that could come and take over your team and bring that same respect, bring that same aura, bring that same interest and intrigue. Place a call into Mark Jackson. He is twice the coach that Jason Kidd is. He's also probably a Hall of Fame point guard. Call Avery Johnson. He's a squeaky little guy, but he's good. He made an NBA championship run with the Dallas Mavericks. It's a little bit more padded of a coaching resume than Jason Kidd has. Go and talk to a guy like Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing, one of the 50 greatest basketball players of all time, has been putting in work as an assistant in Orlando and in Houston, and he has turned around some great centers. He has turned Dwight Howard into a legitimate beast. He was around when Yao Ming was developing before he physically fell apart. Patrick Ewing, by all accounts, has put in the work, has put in the time, and has had success as an assistant. You bring in Patrick. Patrick is going to get headlines. People are going to want to know how the big 7-foot center does when you give him the clipboard and give him the head gig. There were many options where you get that bang for your buck, where you get the pizzazz, you get that intrigue, the media attention, and the following, and you also don't sacrifice two draft picks. It was a terrible move by the Brooklyn Nets. It was a terrible move by Jason Kidd. And quite frankly, it was a terrible move by the Milwaukee Bucks and Jason Kidd. And frankly, it was a great move by the Brooklyn Nets. Lionel Hollins is about to sign on the dotted line. He will be the next head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Lionel Hollins is 10 times the coach that Jason Kidd is at this point in their respective careers. He's a guy that will have the respect of the veterans in that locker room. Brooke Lopez, Darren Williams, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, you name it, he'll have their ear. You will get Hollins and you get those two assets from the Milwaukee Bucks. And when the Milwaukee Bucks continue to be terrible, those second round picks will be in the first half, possibly the first 5, 6, or 7 picks in that second round. A great move for Brooklyn and a pox on the house of the Milwaukee Bucks. Now it is time. I always forget what we call this segment. The ignorant sports question of the day?
The ignorant sports question of the day.
See, I'm too ignorant to remember the ignorant sports question of the day. Now, this segment, if you're just tuning in here to Shooting Bricks, is where my man Matt Olmstead, not the world's biggest sports aficionado, asks an ignorant sports question, and we talk about it.
Fantastic. All right. A couple of my friends, while we were under the influence of whatever we were having during the day, decided...
During the day.
I'm a musician. There is no wrong time of the day.
Okay, so you were day drinking or day doing something, and you started talking. All right, now I'm just trying to paint the picture.
No, I was with a bunch of other musicians.
Is this a weekday? Is this a weekday?
It's any day. I can't remember. They all mesh together.
That's good. You have a child. Continue.
Anyway, we started talking. Because all my friends are musicians as well, and none of us follow any sports whatsoever. We started talking about ways to make conventional sports more appealing to us non-sports people. So we went through the list of sports, and the first one that we came up with was NASCAR. How do we find, or how do we make a 3-hour-long event of 200-mile-per-hour cars going around in circles more interesting?
There is no way to make NASCAR interesting.
Well, this is what we came up with, and it doesn't have to be realistic in any way, shape, or form, because this would be playing with people's lives. But if you took that oval track and turned it into a figure eight track with an awesome intersection in the middle, how much more fun would that be to watch?
So you just want to kill people. Dale Earnhardt would be proud.
He's already dead, though, so it doesn't matter.
It's cold, man. It's cold. Too soon? I suppose that would be more interesting.
Well, what's the only
reason
that
everybody just yielded? You know, if everybody's just playing by the rules and being really cordial.
A stoplight in the middle of the intersection?
That would be interesting. I mean, the best way to make NASCAR interesting is to hit yourself with a brick, get yourself a Miller Lite, and just watch people go vroom. I mean, it's a terrible... I was watching NASCAR once, this is true. The one time I ever sat through a NASCAR race, I was in Ohio at my cousin's house. My cousin is a farmer. He's actually a tractor tire engineer. Makes a boatload of bank. But he's a big NASCAR guy. He has a NASCAR fantasy team. That's real. I did not know that they made NASCAR fantasy. He is on the NASCAR. He's in the NASCAR fantasy league. So we're watching this thing. Vroom, vroom, circle, circle, circle. 217 laps. That's when we picked it up. My dad goes to bed, my aunt goes to bed, my sister goes. It gets down to about 12 laps left, and they throw a white flag. When they throw a white flag, there's some sort of a crash or debris on the course, and they stop everybody, and you go in for a pit stop. And from what I can tell, anybody that was within the same lap basically gets to start over. It's a tie all of a sudden. I don't know how you get back to the exact position you were in. Doesn't make sense to me. Anyway. His guy goes in, gets 2 tires changed. The other guy goes in, gets all 4 tires changed. My cousin goes, he's an idiot. He's going to burn out. The other guy's going to win. And he goes to bed. Now, my cousin's a tractor engineer, tractor tire engineer. So he's probably more of an expert than, woohoo, go Dale! Your average NASCAR guy. So he literally gets up and goes to bed with 12 laps left. We have watched 215 of these laps, something along those lines. I'm sitting there like, no, man. I'm watching the end of this damn race.
I'm committed.
I sit there, I'm watching this race around lap number 6 or lap number 4. The guy's front two tires that he didn't change start to give, not enough tread. The other guy zooms by him, literally verbatim what my cousin said. This guy wins the race. That's good engineering. That is not athleticism. That is not a sport. If you can just out-engineer a guy, I don't know why, by the way, if one guy has time to get 4 tires, why the other guy wouldn't just get 4 tires. Like, half of his pit crew is just chilling, smoking cigarettes, like, no.
Only 12. Fine. Only 12 laps left. Yeah, we've got this.
My knee hurts. I don't want to bend over. But yeah, it's a terribly boring sport. I know that a lot of people like it. I know that the South is absolutely intrigued and enthralled with Tony Stewart and all of those guys. I don't think that there is anything, even a figure eight course, that could entertain me when you're talking about NASCAR. Football's obviously incredibly entertaining. I don't think that there's anything. All you could do with in football is go back to the way it was played in 2001, 2002. Let guys hit each other, sign disclaimers in, you know, with everybody's contract that says, we will give you great health care after you retire, but you need to understand what you're getting into. This is a game where you work out, you take steroids, you do whatever you need to do to get as big and as fast and as strong as possible, and then you run into other guys who've been doing the same thing.
As hard as you can.
The only thing you could try to do is make it into the XFL, but that was an absolute failure.
Well, was it Vince McMahon started that? I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. I'm sorry,
because Matt is going to make a better league, because Vince McMahon has had no success in entertaining people.
Well, wrestling is more of a soap opera for dudes. You know, when it comes to football,
it's for boys.
Well, I know some adults,
I know a lot of adults that like wrestling. And listen, I respect you very much as individuals. Wrestling is a soap opera for boys that some adults still like.
Absolutely.
My friend of mine's brother once went to a WWE event, and in the front row, he had like front row seats. It was the type of thing where he wouldn't have gone to a WWE event. But somebody's like, hey, I got front row seats to a WWE event. That's kind of funny in an ironic way. Let's go.
Why
I guess
not? Free
he's
tickets.
There. Sitting next to him is Wade Boggs. And he's just hammered. Just screaming at everybody. So apparently, boys, some men, and Wade Boggs. That is your viewing audience.
That's your demographic.
But Vince McMahon understands the entertainment value of brute physical contact. That's what he sells. So you'd figure if that was attractive, if anybody was going to be able to make that work, it would have been Vince, and that was a huge failure. So I don't think that would really do it. I mean, you look at the NBA, they tried slam ball.
That's with trampolines,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Not that amazing. You'd think it would be amazing. It would be way cooler if they could do it with one big trampoline. But they have all the other small trampolines, so guys need to like watch where they step and watch how they bounce. I don't know.
And they had a basketball game on, was it MTV sponsored one, right? There was like celebrities, and you had different point values, like the 50-point shot and the 30-point shot, all around the court.
Like NBA Jam TE for Sega Genesis?
No. This is an actual game. I remember watching it in the 90s. They pulled a bunch of celebrities, pitted them against each other, had weird names, and there were huge point shots, specialty shots all over. You had these tiny little circles all over. If you could make those shots, the scores would be ridiculous, but none of the celebrities actually knew how to play basketball well. So it was kind of a shit show from beginning to end.
You know, that sounds pretty stupid. Really, there's nothing you could do to either. You like watching great athletes compete in certain, you know, events, essentially, or you don't. There's nothing really. Oh, we put whipped cream on them, and nothing really changes the intrigue of a non-sports fan. I will say, to tie it full circle, one thing that would be interesting, as we were talking about earlier, the advancement of soccer in the United States. What about a guy like LeBron James or Colin Kaepernick, some of these freak athletes, Mike Trout, instead of playing basketball, football, baseball, they were playing soccer. That, I think, is the only thing that can turn around outside of bringing some Premier League teams into the States. The biggest thing that can turn around soccer in this country is if our greatest athletes started playing it. Could you imagine? Tim Howard had a great game. He was trending on Twitter, all that great stuff. Could you imagine if our goaltender was the 6'8", 270, jump through the gym, LeBron James? If our midfielder was Colin Kaepernick with his 4'3 speed? If we were putting our A-list athletes, we don't put, look at our soccer players. Our soccer players are some scrawny, scrawny dudes. There are not that many players in the National Basketball Association that I think I could beat up in a fight. I think I have a fighting chance. Now, those soccer players have phenomenal endurance, so they can outlast me. I have like a two-shot sucker punch combo.
If you don't knock them out in 1 minute, you're toast.
Exactly. Once they realize that I'm throwing the left and I'm throwing the left
they
only.
They butterbean you.
But there are some scrawny guys. I mean, even when you looked at Cristiano Ronaldo, as he was shaking hands with Clint Dempsey before the game, he was just a thicker, more physical human being. We have skinny guys on our team. Tim Howard's a phenomenal athlete, and he looks like a phenomenal athlete. The rest of our USA team looks like your friend Phil, who was really good in high school. That's what our team looks like. If we put our great athletes, that's not what our NFL players look like. That's not, you know, Kevin Durant aside, because Kevin Durant weighs 125 pounds soaking wet. That's not what our great NBA athlete looks like.
So I like where you're going with this. If we were to make a fantasy soccer team, you could pick anybody from all over any of the sports and put them together. And, you know, I think that would be a great advantage for the U.S. all over the world, just because all the other teams are working on speed and, you know, foot control. But if you had a 6'10" monster, you know, kicking a ball, you're less likely to attack him the same as like a 5'4". Hey, he's got the ball.
Here's a question. And Will, we got to get out of here, but this is an interesting one. If we took our greatest athletes starting today, if we took LeBron James, and I'm not talking about LeBron James when he's 6 years old, instead of giving him a basketball, you give him a soccer ball. I'm talking about 28-year-old LeBron James, the basketball star. If you drafted a team, a super squad of USA athletes, Adrian Peterson playing midfield, LeBron James, I would say Michael Vick, he's a little bit past his prime, but these sorts of guys, you know, Mike Trout, as I said earlier, Colin Kaepernick, as I said earlier, Calvin Johnson, Victor Cruz, if you assembled a super team and had them start playing soccer, had them learn how to play soccer over the next 4 years, do you think they would be more successful than Team USA was this past World Cup?
That's hard to say, but you know what? I would personally watch that game.
Oh,
that
no
would make me
it.
More entertained than anything. Seeing a team of guys that have never played soccer before.
Now, they would have 4 years to prep this bad boy out. They would be training. They would be doing what they needed to do, a little cardiovascular, learning how to kick. If we took those monster athletes of all our different sports, because let's be real, most of these countries, Portugal's main export is soccer. Brazil's main export is soccer. They don't play soccer and basketball and football. They play soccer and then sprinkle some other athletes and some other sports elsewhere. If we took our great athletes and made a hodgepodge squad and gave them 4 years to become the greatest in the world, would they be able to be the greatest in the world, or would they at least be better to be than the white guy with dreads that we threw out there yesterday?
I think they would do a fantastic job. I honestly think they would do better. That would be amazing. If they didn't, it would still be way more amazing to watch, which was the whole point of this question, which was amazing. So thank you for just making soccer way more interesting in my brain.
Absolutely. So that is the second. We are 2 for 2 on extended soccer talk here on Shooting Bricks, and I promise you, that will be the last extended soccer conversation. But listen, when in Rome, when in Brazil, go ahead and talk a little bit of World Cup. This has been Shooting Bricks. That's Matt Olmsted. I'm Pierce Bricks. Appreciate you tuning in. We will catch you next week.